Hello, hello, good evening, Philadelphia, New Jersey, and Delaware. Welcome back to the Hour of Power. This is Pastor Reg. My co-host, Pastor Steve, is out with some R&R, that good and well-deserved vacation. But I am blessed today to have some tremendous leaders and trailblazers who historically have been a part of the front line of leading in our city. And I don't know whether or not they understand the irony of this day. We are blessed on Our Power today to have former presidents of one of the most effective and most prestigious black organization, political organization in the state of Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, Black Clergy. And I have two former presidents in the studio co-hosting with me today. We have devoted this entire show for 1 hour. Other than commercials, we want to talk about the Charlottesville, Virginia dilemma and racism in America. We are not going to let this issue go. We're going to deal with it, and we're going to talk through with it because my guest today and my co-hosts who are in the studio with me, we're going to spend this hour dealing with what took place a few weeks ago in Charlottesville, Virginia, and where we are today and where we're looking forward to going. And I'm so happy to have in the studio with me Dr. Robert Shine, who's the pastor of the Baraka Baptist Church and also the former president of the Black Clergy, also a leading pastor in the Progressive National Baptist Convention. We're not going to hold that against him. And also on my right, I have the Reverend Dr. William B. Moore, the pastor of the 10th Memorial Baptist Church, and the ongoing chair of our Foreign Missions Bureau, one of the leading, long-standing leaders in the National Baptist Convention, USA. So we have some heavyweights in the studio with us, and so I want them to kind of begin to shake this bag loose as we begin to talk about three things that we want to deal with today. Hopefully we have enough time to get through with it. But number one, we want to deal with what is the event in Charlottesville telling us? What is the event in Charlottesville telling us? Number two, how do we respond to the unhealthy behavior of the commander in chief? And y'all know who that is, right? And the third thing is, what do we expect to walk away with by pushing for accountability, healing, and change? Voters' rights is an issue. Affordable health care for all Americans is an issue. Public school funding is an issue, and affirmative action and many other issues, because when we protest with the 1960 model, we walked away with the Voters' Rights Act. We walked away with deliverables that Lyndon Johnson and others had to give to us because we were going to demonstrate until we get what we need to serve our community. And so we're going to be dealing with those issues today. If you have any questions, you want to get on into this conversation, call us at 888-329-3306. 888-329-3306. You're listening to the Hour of Power, 860 AM, WWDB. Dr. Shine, come on in here and let us start this conversation in the sense of how do we move forward.
Thank you, Reverend Johnson. I'm delighted to be here with you and my colleague, Reverend William B. Moore. He's one of the outstanding leaders of our time in Philadelphia and the state, as well as across the nation. Have great respect and high admiration for Dr. William B. Moore. So I'm delighted to join you and he on this broadcast for this evening. Mm-hmm. When you mentioned the three points under consideration for this evening, thinking about what does the events of Charlottesville, Virginia tell us? Mm-hmm. In my opinion, it is a pivotal point in American history with respect to the racial issues, whether anti-Semitism, whether it's racism regarding the white supremacists, the Nazism, the alt-right. These are three anti-American organizations and have been historically. As far as the anarchy as was stated, most often than not, we've heard that anarchy is applicable when African Americans are protesting and the protest ends in some violent action. We've been subject as African Americans with anarchy issues down through the history.
Right, right.
Of which we all are aware. However, in Charlottesville, it tells us that there is a movement afoot that America, quote unquote, taking America back.
Right.
Was the mantra, the theme of the person in the White House, as you indicated.
Mm-hmm.
And it was adopted by these anti-American organizations, as I have identified. They believe wholeheartedly. And I believe that if America is to live up to the experiment that it was intended to be,
mm-hmm.
Out of one blood, all nations, that it would be a melting pot, anything but. And so consequently, we have been the victims of unjust laws, and it will continue unless and until there is a rise, and again, in my view, of the African-American community.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not leaving our future,
right,
nor our legacy for our children to anyone else.
Right, right.
We must defend our right as American citizens.
And do you believe, and I'm Dr. Mark, I want you to come on to the same point about what does this tell us, but I just want to flesh out what you just said. Do you believe that Charlottesville was just a remnant of really the temperature or the feeling of many in our nation today? Many of them are still hiding and not voicing what was or expressing what took place in Charlottesville. But it is in our corporate boardrooms. It's in many of our corporations. Mm-hmm. And I think there were two individuals that have been charged so far. But there were thousands present. And so the enforcement of this hate crime that took place in Charlottesville, there hasn't been much aggressive search for those individuals who were present with sticks beating people. And so would you agree that we have fallen asleep and have allowed some of these persons to operate without saying anything?
Well, we have I wouldn't say that the black church, the black community has fallen asleep, but they stood by. And having stood by, they were also victims of just standing still, idle, waiting to see what outcomes the government, whether the police or whether the state or whether the federal government would take some decisive action.
Mm-hmm.
And now because a clarion call has sounded and the alarm has been heard, I think this gives rise to a broadcast such as this.
Right, right. Dr. Moore, chime in, because I know you got a lot to say, and I do know that you took a picture. You, on your way back from vacation, you stopped in Charlottesville, and they had the General Lee covered by plastic. Talk to us about what we believe it was telling us in Virginia.
Thank you so much, Dr. Johnson. I appreciate being on your program and especially being on this program with Dr. Shine. I've worked in a number of venues with both of you men and have great respect for you and the work that you do on a daily basis, and not just in a time of crisis, but even when there's not a crisis. I know that both of you are continuing to work, and I appreciate that. I also just need to correct one thing. I am the immediate past chair of the Foreign Mission
Board. I was prophesied.
Yes. I've served for 17 years, and enough is enough.
Yes, sir.
So I want to support Dr. Griffith and Dr. Bobo, who is the chair. I think that Charlottesville tells us two or three things. First of all, I think it says to us that we have not made as much progress as we think we have made.
Okay.
We've come a long ways, but we still have a lot of work to do.
Right.
And I think the other side of that is that we have not come as far as we think we have come.
Mm-hmm.
Even though we can move in and out of a lot of quarters and go to places that we have not heretofore been able to to go to. But I think that Charlottesville is really the tip of the iceberg
right.
to a problem that we have not solved. We have not had an honest discussion about racism, number one. And we have not had an honest discussion with our white brothers about white privilege and how even in the best of our white friends, when they began to talk about racism, it was very interesting how the leadership in both parties and other folks who are not politically connected condemned racism and neo-Nazism and white supremacy, but they failed to condemn the sin
right.
that brought about these things.
Right.
So it's like dealing with the problem, but not dealing with the symptom of the problem.
Right. Right. Right.
And so we still have a lot of work to do together. We've come a long ways.
Right.
But we still have a long, long ways to go.
Right. And Dr. Moore, I think you hit on a point that it's almost that one is so ashamed of one's history. Instead of going through the healing in our faith, we talk about reconciliation. We talk about if you find your brother in a fault, you restore him. You go to him and restore him. And I think that dialogue through generations have not yet come to the point of renewal where that we can then walk together in a context of reconciliation. And I think that's where we have to begin to think about the fact that persons, when you hit that button, folk don't want to talk about it. That's a non-subject matter. They want to move off from it. And it seems, as what you've said, that everybody want to run away from it, but nobody wants to deal with what's going on in America. And if we don't deal with it, it's going to destroy the work and the effort that's been made over the years, because our country right now is in trouble. We are, even our millennials, and I mentioned them because they play a part. They don't have the full exposure in the sense of the experience in the 60s, but they are tired. And on two sides, they are tired because their voice is not being heard, as they say. But then secondly, they see what's going on as well because of their opportunities. And I think that they don't have the temperament of us. They are not as patient as us. They will demonstrate a little different. And I think that, and you can get on it again, Dr. Moore, because you've been over to foreign missions for years, and you see other cultures, other countries, and then you come back to America and even see from the apartheid and Nelson Mandela in Africa and all the things that are going there. But here in America, with all these years past, still we're dealing with this great, as you said, the sin, slavery, enslavement of people, of a race of people. And this country have not yet repented from what she's done unto another race.
We have a lot of nice, polite conversations about racism, but we really don't get to the heart of the matter, heart of the problem. And until we have a very honest discussion about it, we're not going to get too far. I think we, and I say we, African-American leaders, have to assume some responsibility in the sense that we have failed to tell our story. We take the Jews. They never let their children forget the Holocaust.
Mm-hmm.
They never let them forget the story of how they were enslaved. But because we have, quote-unquote, made it, and I say, quote, unquote, made it, because we really haven't. Because unless all of us are free, none of us are free.
That's right. That's right.
And somewhere along the line, we stopped telling our story. In the 60s, because we all had the same weight of Jim Crowism on our neck, we fought together. All of our civil rights organizations fought together.
Right.
It was not unusual to see SCLC, the NAACP, SNCC, all of our, the Urban League, all of our organizations were working together because we had the same foot on our neck. But somehow or another, we feel as though we have made it. And that foot is on some Knicks, but it's not on all about Knicks.
Right, right. Well, we got to take a break right here to pay some bills, Dr. Mo, but we want to go in our next segment on this subject because I think that plays a vital part. All of our historical organizations, even tied into Power, Black Lives Matter, and other more current, more new contemporary organizations, how we actually begin to weave these newer ideologies with some of the practical approaches in the past and how we work together, because I think every organization for the cause plays a part. We don't want to diminish anybody or say that they don't have a voice, but I think that one voice is more powerful than multiple voices because the enemy separates us. But when we come together as one, the Psalms even tells us one can chase a thousand. Two can chase 10,000 to a flight. Let's imagine when you add everybody together, we can put the enemy on the run. But if we're divided, that's what he does. He divides us, and we know God is a God of order. So if we're not together, then we cannot make no progress. And so on the other side, and good to have Dr. Allen in the studio with us. He's looking sharp today. He had an official day today. And so we on the other side, we will bring him in this conversation. You're listening to the Hour of Power, a radio show here, WWDB 860 AM. You won't want to miss this. Don't you go nowhere. There's some hot topics being discussed here today, and you need to call somebody. Tell them to get on Facebook Live, Hour of Power Radio Show, or they can go to 860 AM. Call us 888-329-3306. Some healing information is being shared. We'll talk to you in a few minutes.
You are a Pennsylvania worker. One day, you get injured on the job. Suddenly, your employer and their insurance company turn their backs on you. You deserve better. Call Martin Law to arrange a free in-person consultation. We'll meet with you to make sure you get the workers' compensation benefits you deserve. Call 215-587-8400 or visit paworkinjury.com. Martin Law, the law firm for injured workers.
Take a look under your bed. Find stuff under there? What about jobs? No? Now try your basement. There's a pair of overalls that, overall, you're not so into anymore. A perfectly good laptop that hasn't seen your lap in months. And even more stuff, but still no jobs? Well, you really have both. See, stuff is defined as household articles considered as a group. Sometimes this stuff is no longer needed. Wait, no longer needed? That can't be right. Because remember those jobs you were looking for? Those are really needed. And they're the stuff inside your stuff. Even inside that winter coat that moved with you to Phoenix. Our job is to unlock those jobs. And it starts when you donate your stuff to your local Goodwill. Here's how we do it. When you donate to Goodwill, we sell your stuff to provide job training for people right here in your community. So just by teaming up with Goodwill, you help create jobs. And isn't that worth parting with the leftover keytar from your 80s cover band? Goodwill. Donate stuff. Create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
It's Thursday night, and you're grabbing drinks with some friends. Started off with a pitcher for the table, which quickly becomes two. There's pool. And there's the photo booth.
All right, everybody, squeeze in. Say cheese!
Followed naturally by an order of wings. And another.
Can we get some extra ranch sauce?
Then there's the ceremonial nightcap.
So what are we doing this weekend?
And lastly, it's back to the car, which, if you're buzzed... could be the most expensive night of your life. Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Hour of Power. This is Pastor Rich. I have the privilege of three co-hosts. I have Dr. Shand, Dr. Moore, and now our third host is in the studio with us, Dr. James Allen, the retired pastor of the Great Vine Memorial Baptist Church, former president of the Black Clergy of Philadelphia, and the president of the Ministers Division and the Cardinals of Christian Education of the National Baptist Convention, USA. So we got the Progressive National Baptist Convention, and we got the the Progressive National Baptist Convention and the National Baptist Convention USA all together on one accord. And when you say folk can't come together, when Progressive and National can be in the same room together for a cause, I think, brethren, we are making progress. And let me make one correction. Dr. James Allen is the first president of the Black Clergy of Philadelphia. So we are making history because those of you who are watching on Facebook, take a good look at these men. They, under their administration, with respect to all the other presidents, but under their leadership, they really helped shape the direction of the Black clergy, which brought truth to power, the teacher strike, the union. They negotiated that even when some of them went to jail. And I wasn't old enough to go to jail. I just read about it and heard about it in dialogue. And thank God for them to work for me so I didn't have to get in that. Cause I've never been to jail, and I ain't trying to go.
We saved you for this season.
Yes, sir. I'll go now. I'll go if you go with me. If we go. But we want to get back in this conversation. And Dr. Allen, we want to start with you, but we're going to go around the table. And we dealt with what does this Charlottesville event tells us. But then number two, what we want to deal with now is that this behavior of this president. How do we respond to the unhealthy behavior of the commander-in-chief in the sense of as leaders and pastors? How do we respond to this commander-in-chief and how he's cavalierly functioning in this society?
Essentially, I think what we have to do is prepare to exercise our vote.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, let me just mention when the now president was running for president, you remember his theme was Making America Great Again.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote him a letter,
mm-hmm.
and I asked him, when was America great?
Wow.
I wanted to know what period could I look at in American history to compare when America was great, and ask, was it during slavery?
Mm-hmm.
Was it during the days of intense segregation and mm-hmm. discrimination? When was America great? What do I have to measure America's greatness by? But he said, making America great again. And if he said making America great,
mm-hmm.
that's one thing. But making America great again,
mm-hmm.
that's talking about used to be.
Right, right.
Now, when was the used to be?
Right, right.
I never got a response, of course, when I wrote to him about that.
Well, do we need to find a way to resend it and send it multiple times? Maybe send it about 100,000 copies to him. He may read one of them.
Well, I suspect that it might be too late now. Because he's in now.
That was before he became president.
But I think there are some other things that we need to write to him about.
Yeah.
And the second, and I think the most critical thing is, and maybe you've already talked about this,
mm-hmm.
But we have to register and vote.
Yes, sir.
And we have to vote our interests.
Yeah, yeah.
We can't vote just because we want to vote.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's all right. But we have to vote our interests. Now, what is our interest?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think persons such as yourselves who have experience in looking at that, maybe we should develop some kind of paper to distribute not only within the listening parameters of this broadcast,
yeah,
but throughout the nation,
mm-hmm.
where we have sat down and evaluated what is our interest,
mm-hmm.
and how do we go about achieving the goals that we ought to set for ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because I have concluded that nobody's going to do it for us.
Right.
We're going to have to do it ourselves.
Right, right. Dr. Moore, what do you?
I think that I certainly agree with Dr. Allen. The greatest weapon that we have to make political change is our vote.
Mm-hmm.
Voting at 28% is not going to cut it.
Not going to cut it.
30 million African Americans not voting in an election is not going to cut it.
Right.
And I think there are a lot of things that we can do before we get to number 45. I think right now we need to get every person that's unregistered, we got to get them registered and to make sure that when voting time comes, they vote.
Yeah.
Not just at the top of the ticket in a presidential election and a mayoral election, but all the way down the ticket.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever there's an election, we ought to get in the habit of voting.
Right.
And we need to do it. But the other thing that has happened that the Republicans have strategically throughout this country drawn the voting, redrawn the voting lines, the districting, so that they will always get elected.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you look at the number of Republican governors that have been elected. It is because the votes have been, the districts have been drawn so that the outcome can be to their party, just as it is now. All the way up and down the line, the House, the Senate, is true in Pennsylvania. The only thing that's different in Pennsylvania is every other year, every other voting year, we vote Democrat, Republican. But now the presidency, the House, and the Senate now are controlled by Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
And so that there's no sanction. He can, president can say what he wants to say because he knows that his base is going to always be there.
Yeah, yeah.
And the only way to erode that base is to vote.
Right, right. Dr. Shine.
Yes. The comment was made earlier regarding the protests and the marches. And I've always advocated that protests are good, but as the discussion is going on here, protests are good, but alternatives are better. And that is increasing the registration effort. One of the ways by which the voter registration effort can be increased is to have the data available to us, as Reverend Moore indicated.
Mm-hmm.
That state by state, we can find out the voter registration population in every state. And beginning here in Pennsylvania, we can make some assessment as to how we can begin to mobilize our colleagues in particular from Erie to Philadelphia.
Okay.
And in doing so, if we unite together on the common issue. What is the common cause for us? Because for them, for us, every election is local. And as a result, we need to be supportive of them in Erie, them in Pittsburgh, them in Harrisburg, Erie, Lancaster, Reading, and then they in turn supportive of us. We need to learn what is the way by which we can support those other counties, those other cities, so that they can increase their voting population,
right.
And then we as well. With respect to legislation, we can write legislation among ourselves,
mm-hmm.
and then seek those legislators to write the legislation and bring it to the floor. How can we do that? Because if we went en masse,
mm-hmm.
To Harrisburg, as an example, and approach and have already joined with our legislators from the Philadelphia community, and then we go there, our presence may pose
mm-hmm.
An intimidation factor that we want this legislation passed in the state that affects us educationally. If, and I'm an operator mm-hmm. of a charter school, but if charter schools is one of the economic problems to public education, then we need to be able to take a decisive stand.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to mass incarceration in Pennsylvania, when it comes to the death penalty in Pennsylvania, while the governor has a moratorium, we need to be sure that that moratorium is in place and that there is a process by which it will not be overturned by those who would be opposed to it.
Let me say this. Two things the in which you said that we know the president have now ordered a commission to go and asking for persons, their political affiliation, the party they're affiliated with. Then they want to know the part of their Social Security number. And the area that they live, which is, I think, it's privacy being violated.
Right.
And so if we're doing pushback on the president and his commission to want to get that information, I think that we have to find a more strategic way of getting that information, which our pulpits is a great way, and our mobilization in our communities with persons in our communities in that regard. But the second piece is that the candidate, and that's what we need to talk about. We need to have to talk about the candidate that we're going to stand behind. Because the candidate that runs in the next general election is what's going to put us in the right position. We can't be fighting like we did in the last election because another person won, you know, and then just go behind that person. There was too much fussing and disagreement going on this side and that side. And when you divide it, the other party going to end up, you know, taking the spoils. And so we got to begin now talking about who's our candidate. And we need to stand behind that candidate and push that candidate, not from the beginning, but stay all the way to the end. Because if we don't have the right candidate, although we mobilized, we're not going to have the right outcome. We need a candidate that has a prophetic voice, that understands the issues, and stands with us, and we can stand clearly and definitively to support. And we want to kind of carry that into the next part of this discussion, because I think that all that's going on in America right now, Barack Obama changed, we cried because of history, because of he had a understood the pulse of this country. He articulated. I remember, how do you remember the day that he spoke at the first time came out, spoke at the convention. His voice was so relevant, and the spirit that he exhibited was there, and he became the president. Do we have that individual like that today? Are we setting the bar too high? Dr. Allen, Dr. Moore, Dr. Shines, one of y'all want to run, you know?
Well, I've been thinking about it.
Well, Doctor,
that's all I've been doing, thinking about it.
We're going to stand behind you, you know? You know, you got my vote, but you want to get my one.
I'm running for the kingdom right now. That's the only race I'm in right now.
For a seat in the kingdom.
But we want to talk about that because I think at the end of the day, you know, we can't allow Charlottesville to become another hidden speck in our mind of what took place in this. Oh, y'all remember Charlottesville, and then nothing happens. This is an opportunity for us to make sure that they don't get away. We keep Charlottesville in their faces because we know the president is already in his behavior, already trying to turn us away from Charlottesville and get us in to some other discussions. And I think we need to come right back once we, and first of all, let me put this on the record. We are praying for those in Texas suffer from Hurricane Harvey, and we are praying for you, and our conventions and our churches will be in support of all of those persons who've lost their possessions. Some have lost their lives. The storm has been a tremendous storm, and if we haven't seen one like this in a long time, and I know what happened in South Carolina, Hugo, and we know Sandy and others. So we do pray for our colleagues who have churches in Houston area, mm-hmm. and Galveston and Rockport and other areas, that they will be well and that God will bring forth healing. You listen to the Hour of Power. I have my co-host in the studio. I'm their understudy, you know, and I'm so happy to have these giants amongst me so that they continue to pour into us who are beginning to walk forward in the Lord. And so we're thankful for them. And so we'll be back on the other side of this commercial. Don't go anywhere. We want to spend the rest of the show talking about what we take away from Charlottesville. We need to walk away with something. We can't walk away with an empty hand. We need to go. We're not trying to tell nobody to rob nobody, but we're going to walk away with something, and I believe these pastors are going to be able to tell us how to go about doing it. You listen to Hour Power, WWDB 860 AM. We'll see you in a few minutes.
You are a Pennsylvania worker. One day, you get injured on the job. Suddenly, your employer and their insurance company turn their backs on you. You deserve better. Call Martin Law to arrange a free in-person consultation. We'll meet with you to make sure you get the workers' compensation benefits you deserve. Call 215-587-8400 or visit paworkinjury.com. Martin Law, the law firm for injured workers.
Introducing the YMCA. What, you already know the why? Or so you think. Sure, you know the why for a swim, a workout, even a game of hoops. But did you know we're more than that? We're a cause. When you take your jump shot at the Y, someone else is getting job training. Take a cardio class while kids are in an after-school enrichment program. Practice your downward-facing dog as a teen practices her leadership skills. That's the Y. We work with people no matter their age, income, or background, and give them the opportunity to learn, grow, and thrive, all with one simple goal in mind, to strengthen our community. And we've got so much more that does just that. So while you might think of the Y as that place for lifting weights, we're also about lifting entire communities. Introducing the Y. We're so much more than a place. We're a cause. Visit ymca.net/more.
At any given moment, somewhere in America, a baby is taking a first step, a developmental milestone. But for too many parents, a baby's first steps aren't just a milestone. They're a miracle. These are the parents of babies who were born prematurely or with birth defects. It's a crisis affecting more than 500,000 babies in the United States each year. You can help them by joining volunteers like you who walk in March for Babies. The money you raise funds research and local programs that help babies overcome the challenges of premature birth and birth defects. Together, our steps make stronger, healthier babies a reality for thousands of families. Sign up today at marchforbabies.org to take the steps that help make milestones and even miracles possible. Who will you march for?
Welcome back to the Hour of Power. I'm Pastor Reg, along with Dr. Robert Shine, Dr. James Allen, Dr. William B. Moore, here, our co-host in this hour show dedicated to dealing with the issue of the Charlottesville, Virginia, and racism in America. And so far we have dealt with what is the event in Charlottesville telling us, number one. Number two, how do we respond to the unhealthy behavior of the commander in chief? And we want to close out this segment, which I think is the most important part, is the takeaway. What do we expect to walk away with by pushing accountability? If we're going to protest, if we're going to demonstrate peacefully, because we are children of God, the Bible teaches us to hold our peace, the Lord to fight the battle, and that he will avenge. And so what is the takeaway? What is the strategy? How do we begin to, even when it's painful and it hurts with some of our colleagues because of maybe business interest, political interest, community interest, maybe won't go out publicly and fight because there are a lot of interconnections and intercommingling of interests that sometimes may prohibit an individual from speaking out. And that means our white colleagues as well as our brethren in our culture, in our race. And so I think as a church, we have to, at the end of the day, you know, if we can't stand for what's right, then we ought not stand at all. And this is a righteous call. This is a kingdom call. Let's talk about that.
Well, I think, first of all, we need a family meeting.
I like that. Family.
One of the things that that we discovered in the organization of black clergy when the schools were closed back in the 80s, I believe, we were calling for the resignation of Mike Marquez. But also Art Thomas was chair of the school board. And we were all on board about calling for the resignation of a white superintendent, Mike Marquez. But I remember when it came to the discussion of Art Thomas, I think it was Reverend Allen who said, we can't do that. I mean, he is the first African American. That's just like wiping away some of our hard-fought progress. We couldn't do that. And I think that recognition, while we were working together on, you know, getting the schools back open, there came a point in time when we had to fight for our own interests, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The things that impacted us.
Yeah.
We need friends in this fight.
Yeah.
But there is a story and a focus that we have that only we can tell.
Right.
And so I think we need to have a family meeting about what we're going to fight about,
right,
you know, in this next season of our history. And how are we going to do that? I think that we ought to speak truth to power.
Yeah.
But the greatest place to do that is in the African-American pulpit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And somehow or another, we have lost that voice, either because we are comfortable or because of our connections and our relationships in the wider community. I know some are doing it. but we're not doing it across this country, and even in our organizations, in our national organizations. We pass nice resolutions, but we don't speak with that passion mm-hmm. for the hurts of our people like we used to. And we've got to return that prophetic voice to the pulpits.
And I think the speaking must translate into action.
Yeah, that's
because
it.
Because if we just talk, you know, we're pretty good at talking.
Right.
What we need to do is come together and sit down with and develop a concrete plan.
Mm-hmm.
This is what our plan is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And then we all buy into that plan.
Right, right.
Because if you're over here and I'm over here and somebody else is over there.
Right.
I mean, and that's the strategy that has been used to keep us down.
Yeah.
Keep us divided.
Yeah.
Keep us fighting among ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And if it keeps us fighting among ourselves, we'll never get to where we ought to be.
Right, right.
So we need to sit down, and I think only the clergy can do this.
Right.
We come together and sit down and say, it doesn't matter who gets the credit.
Right.
But it does matter who gets the benefit.
Yeah.
And those people that we serve are the people who need the benefits more. And so what we need to do is come up with a plan, a concrete plan. And we need to have a planning session.
Right.
And develop a plan. And then they're all saying, plan your work and then work your plan.
Right, right.
And if we do that, our numbers will speak for themselves. And nobody can motivate people better than black preachers.
Right, right.
We're good mm-hmm. motivators.
Uh-huh.
Now, motivating to what? But you know, we're good motivators.
Right, know? Right, right.
So we need to develop a plan and then develop a plan of motivation,
mm-hmm.
getting our folks involved.
Right.
There are a lot of our folk who still believe that it is useless to vote.
Mm.
They don't feel like that it's me. They're going to do what they want to do.
Mm.
Well, they're going to do what they want to do as long as you allow them to do what they want to
right,
do.
Right, right.
So if we develop a plan and then follow through on that plan in such a way that it impacts the lives of people and those who do not work with us. We have a way of dealing with them.
Right,
we can deal with them. We've done it before.
Right.
We can deal with them. And the one of the most effective ways of getting people's attention and those who are in power is hit them in their pocketbook.
Right, right,
and
right.
And we can do that.
Right, right.
But we have to be together on it.
Yeah.
And that's my thinking.
And I think our pocketbooks can be used for us, or those who put money in our pocket books can be used against us.
Right.
And by that I mean so many of our organizations right here in the city of Philadelphia get funds for an annual banquet, a table at their banquet. And these things are fine. They ought to do that anyway. But it ought not be at the expense of
trade-off.
Of not speaking out on things that we ought to speak out on. The voice of none of our organizations ought to be bought because you buy a table or two tables at an annual banquet. That's cheap, and we ought not sell our people down the river like that. And I think Bob had begun to talk about legislation, that we haven't shown our people the relationship between good public policy, bad public policy, and how that can impact the quality of
right.
their life.
That's right.
And we need to see when once our elected officials leave our church having given their spiel, it seems that in some cases, perhaps not all, they become Solomon. And so you cannot address them or talk to them about matters because what happens is even some of us have to go through the bureaucratic steps in terms of how to reach those who we elected to be in office. That becomes a serious problem because our elected officials are also entrapped because we have another power that will not allow any legislation from our legislators to get passed. And that's a serious problem. I think, seriously, what the conversation, the people in the listening audience, I'm glad that they're hearing what they've heard.
Right.
In terms of knowing that the clergy do recognize what the issues are and have it in heart and mind to deal with it now more effectively.
Right.
Provided those of our colleagues will see the wisdom to come together in the family. And in the family, you know, sometimes teeth and tongue fall out, but they never leave.
Right, right.
And so we need to be able to bring together all of those component organizations and have to sit down. But then we need to meet, and I think you started out, Reverend Moore, about our people in the media, not only in radio, but television and the news, print. We need to meet with them and sit down and have a discussion with them because they have some fears.
Right.
Their
right.
fears are about if they spoke out on things in the media that they know is being spun in a different way.
Right.
And if they speak out, you saw what happened to Melissa Harris Perry.
Right, right.
You saw what happened to Reverend Al.
Right.
You saw what happened to Joy Reid, off and on, off and on. You saw what happened to Roland Martin. And so we need to let them know that the church, the leaders, support them, and let's talk to them.
Right.
And because that's another aspect.
Right.
His name was the CEO of Merck & Company.
The black man.
I thought about sending him a letter for the stand he took.
Right.
Because then those that followed him.
Right.
Now, he has a very important role that I think that if we met with him in terms of corporate America and see what where he's going next on these kind of issues. So well, I think we should reach out.
That's what I mean by plan.
Right.
And you see, I think our first role is to galvanize the clergy.
Yeah, we need to come together.
Because, you see, we can't be out there. Let me give you, I heard late Dr. J.H. Jackson once say that during an election in Mississippi, there were some politicians who came by and offered him, you know, certain amenities. And he said, he told him, no, don't give it to me. You give it to my people. They'll give me some of it.
Right.
And I think that's the posture that we must
take.
Right. If you get something, you know, I mean, if I need it, I can come to you. You give me some of it.
Right. And I think that the whole objective, I think that this, we have relationships with other shows. You mentioned the show. We have relationships with the Tribune, with Vogel, other outlets in, because we have to keep this conversation going. Now, we can't, because of other subjects we got to deal with, but we can always find a way to keep the plug, to keep the fire burning. But we cannot allow, this type of dialogue and energy to dissipate because we lose interest. The way that we keep interest, we keep talking about it. And I think when we walk away from it, Dr. Allen, what you're saying, we got to mobilize. And I can commit to you that I know this show, we will talk to other shows, and that we will make sure that our audience going to hear that the clergy, because that's the falsehood that's on the street, that the clergy, the church is no longer empathetic or sympathetic to those who are in our communities. And I think that you've come too far as a pastor and have made a name and your success and all across the board here at this table for that to even be a falsehood. And I think today shows that we do care. And we're going to do more than talk about it. We're going to do something about it.
And I think you hit the nail on the head, as they used to say down home. Those who care, we have to care. We have to care enough to stand out there and expose ourselves to the possibility of being ridiculed. Now, most of us don't like that. I know I don't. But if you're going to accomplish something, you're going to have to do it anyway. And the clergy has historically in the African American community been the group that led in those categories.
Mm-hmm.
We must reassume that responsibility.
Yes, sir.
And we must stand together. And if we stand together, our people will stand with us.
Yeah.
And I think, too, Dr. Allen, we waste too much time with people who don't care.
Yeah.
Trying to get them to care.
Right.
But I think those of us
who he just care, said something.
Those of us who care, you know, have to step out there.
Yeah.
And I believe if we do, there are some people who are just waiting on certain people
yeah.
to step out there.
Yeah.
We can't wait until we get a consensus of everybody. You just got to get out there and take the heat.
Yeah. We're a small group here.
Mm-hmm.
But a fire can start with one match head.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yeah. That's right.
And that's where it has to start somewhere. You know, I know that we don't want to be always talking in the public arena and in social context or in social situations about the theology and Jesus and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But Jesus is our power.
Yeah.
And my illustration, when Jesus was passing through Jericho, Zacchaeus wanted to see him.
Mm-hmm.
He climbed up in a tree.
Right.
And Jesus walked under the limb of the tree and stopped and said, come on up there, man. Come on down.
Right.
I'm going home with you today.
Right.
Now, what happened was the crowd that was with Jesus started criticizing him because Zacchaeus was not a historic follower of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
They started criticizing Jesus for going home with this man who was a sinner, tax collector, and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And Jesus said, well, I'm still going home with you. I'm still going to have dinner with you. He said, we're going to have to sit down with some people who do not always think like we think.
Right, right.
But if we have an opportunity to sit down and talk with them and share with them, we may be able to transform their thinking. Because
right.
Jesus says salvation has come to this man's house today.
That's right.
As a result of his encounter with me, salvation has come to his house. Well, I think that's what we have to do. And I know that there are people who go around and say, well, don't always be preaching to me. But that's what we are. We're preachers.
it's a calling.
Yeah, don't tell me don't preach to
right.
me. That's what I am.
Right.
I mean, that's just not something I do. That's what I am.
Right.
So if you say don't preach to me, you're telling me to shut up.
Right.
Well, I can't do that.
Right.
If I hold my peace,
right.
The rocks will cry
yeah,
out.
Yeah.
So I think that's what we have to do. If we really want to see transformation take place in our communities, in our city, state, nation, yes, and impact the world, we're going to have to get out there and expose ourselves to the possibility of being ridiculed.
Right. Now we're about to, this is powerful. We're about to run out of time. You know, we can go for about 4 or 5 days on this. But Doc, you set up the tone for us to exit this whole conversation today. And I this is not the end. Listen, audience, you've been patient. You've heard us. But with Dr. Allen, give me a quick 60 seconds, a snippet, Dr. Shine, a snippet, Dr. Moore. And then Dr. Allen, you come back in a 30 seconds. You had all yours there, but give us, and then we're going to close that because we got about 2 good minutes and two minutes and 30 seconds to really crystallize what will be our takeaway from this show, because we don't want to say, hey man, how you doing? The show was great. We want to be able to say that we got something done.
Well, I want to make a segue from Dr. Allen and his going to the scripture, because I'm a firm believer in what the Word of God says. There were three passages that came to my mind on November 9th of 2016. Proverbs 21:1, the king's heart is in the hand of the Lord as rivers of water, he turneth it wheresoever he will. The second that came to my mind was 2 Samuel chapter 23:3-4, that he that ruleth over men must be just and rule in the fear of God. The third one was convincing, perhaps more impacting, and that was from Isaiah chapter 3, verse 3 and 4,
mm-hmm.
that I will give you children
mm-hmm.
to reign over you.
Right.
And without the understanding immediately, but in exegeting the text, a theological term, it said to me that the president now in office is immature as a child and inexperienced as a child. And I asked God, why would you do that? And in following through, it's because I will give the nation for punishment.
Right.
That's what the meaning of that text was. Right. And so I'm concluding by saying,
he's a preacher now. He's going to close three times.
So I'm saying that this is what
he's getting ready to do. Right.
Well, Dr. Moore, he on your time. So.
No, I want to conclude right there.
Right. Okay. All right. Dr.
I would think three things. One, we do need a family meeting. Mm-hmm. And out of that family meeting will come a strategy. Those who represent us, I think we need to demand that they do represent us. Mm-hmm. Because too oftentimes, we elect them, but we don't hold them accountable for doing what ought to be done. And if they don't do the job, we ought to vote them out.
Yeah.
And then we need to commit ourselves to an aggressive voter registration program. I think Dr. Allen had a three-point program: voter registration, voter education, and voter participation. You got to get people on the books, got to help them to understand what the issues are, and then we got to get them to the polls to vote. And then we need to reconnect two significant institutions, the Black Preacher and the Black Press, or the Black Media.
Quickly, Dr. Allen.
And don't forget Black businesses.
Yeah.
We have to do that because we won't be able to do a whole lot without some money. And so we need to be supportive of Black businesses.
Yes, sir.
Get the Black business community involved. And we get the whole group involved. And it's just no telling what we can do.
Right. Well, we're out of time. We love all of you. Thank you for listening today. We're out of time, but not out of power. Remember, every Monday from 6 to 7, Hour of Power. You need to hear us. You need to come visit with us on Facebook Live Radio, Hour of Power Radio Show on Facebook. You can get this whole segment live on Facebook. Don't go anywhere. We're off the radio, but we're still on video. So please continue to listen as we continue this dialogue. God bless you. We love you. See you next Monday.